Welcome to the Philharmonia Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 6:52 Greenwich Mean Time. Today is December 14th, and of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. But before we begin on that, let's have a quick review of what's happened this week. And this has been a week dominated really by two events. One was that massive upward dynamic we saw on oil, where it rallied almost $4 or in excess of $4 in a single day and broke upwards from that little consolidation around $90. That shook the complacency, I think, of a lot of people looking at the energy sector. And it looks like the oil price is going to be, if anything, more volatile going forward. The other obviously very important thing that happened this week is that the Fed dropped rates by 25 basis points and made a mess of the statement that accompanied it. Their bedside manner really does need some looking at, because while they are doing presumably everything that they deem necessary to prevent the US economy from going into recession, and I still believe that that is an unlikely prospect. But the wording in which they're couching all of this action is certainly not helping to instill confidence in the markets, and that is certainly something they need to look at. But one thing that Bernanke's predecessor was very good at was talking to the markets, and on occasion talking the markets up. And that is something that Bernanke could really learn to do. Because at the moment, there is a certain amount of doubt as to whether they are doing enough to support the banking sector. All of the various bits and pieces that they have released over the last week, opening the discount window, lowering rates, accepting different forms of collateral, putting in a different auction system, and injecting $40 billion into the global markets in conjunction with a number of other central banks are all very, very positive pieces of news and should help to support markets over the medium term. However, in the short term, we are still very much in a scenario where banks are unwilling to trust each other enough to lend to one another, and that's why you have those spreads of LIBOR over the short-term money market rates, or short-term, treasury bill rates, being extremely wide. Now, the peaks to which they've accelerated just over the last couple of weeks are looking really quite overextended, and it wouldn't be at all surprising if we saw those starting to contract a bit over the next couple of weeks. But right now, what we're looking at is a scenario where there is a great amount of distrust in the market between banks, because there's still that uncertainty as to where the buck is going to stop in terms of who has got the bigger write-downs to make and how much more they're going to write down over the coming quarters. Of course, it's in the interests of those new CEOs taking over at Citibank and Merrill to write down as much now as possible so that they may be able to write something back in later on next year and pay themselves a nice big fat bonus. But that is also something that will play out over time. It doesn't really change the longer term aspect for what we can expect from markets, but I'll get to that. The other big move this week has been in the currency markets. The dollar, which bottomed, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, or maybe 3 weeks ago at this point, near 150 against the euro, has strengthened rather considerably in here today. And that was, I presume, against, I think, well, it's not really a presumption. It was certainly following some stronger inflation data here today, and also the realization that that was feeding through from then expectations that the Fed may not cut as much as people had anticipated, but also the fact that there is a certain amount of change in sentiment slowly towards this muddled through as attitude to the markets rather than these apocalyptically bearish reports that we've seen over the last couple of weeks. So that has certainly helped the dollar. And The dollar does look like it has further room to appreciate in here. I don't think that this is the absolute bottom for the dollar. Currency markets don't generally have V-shaped bottoms. They tend to mess around in very big patterns, both at the top and the bottom, because they're such enormous markets, and it's very much like turning an oil tanker. It takes a long time. But right now, it does look like bullish activity for the dollar. This week also had rather significant bearish activity on some of the precious metals, silver and gold in particular, sold off rather aggressively over the last couple of days. And you have silver down below $14, and gold is also back below $800. So we're still seeing this ranging consolidation of those very impressive gains that we saw from the mid-August lows in the precious metals sector. Platinum is certainly outperforming. It's actually up in here today against a background of weakness in gold and silver. The industrial metals are also going through a bit of pain in here, and you have nickel flirting once more with 25,000, although up today above 26,000, 26,500 in fact, and lead has broken down this week really from this consolidation around the sort of 3,000 level. It was further weakness this week. Copper also a little bit weaker and flirting with this $3 level. It's actually below that in here, very similar to where it was this time last year when we saw in the final week of December and beginning of July it break down rather considerably, and I think that's probably not a point lost on market participants in here right now. And then looking at the equity markets this week, we have had some really rather whipsaw activity, and it does look like we're going to have this increased volatility for a while longer to deal with. The Wall Street indices came off really rather heavily following that rate cut decision, steadied up a bit yesterday and are a little bit weaker in here today, although we're still 2 hours from the close, so it's anyone's guess as to where they're going to close right now. But what it does look like is that we've seen a high of at least near-term significance, and these markets, whether they be in the US or in Europe, need to break above the highs that we saw on Wednesday to reassert the overall bullish attitude. And with the activity we've seen over the last couple of days, I think there's, if we were betting people, it's a little bit better than 50-50 that they probably won't be able to do that, and we're going to see some ranging activity here because a lot of markets, particularly the DAX in Germany, had ranged right back up towards its high and encountered a little bit of resistance. Germany is probably the market that has performed best this year of the developed markets, and it is certainly showing relative strength in here. So if there were one market that we're going to break upwards to new highs, it probably is Germany, although a number of others have also ranged up towards those highs. What we can also say is that the markets that are weakest are probably those that have had the biggest weighting of banks, and they are the ones that are outperforming. We won't really get a signal that those markets that are heavily weighted in banks have turned until we see some base building or firming in those banking sectors, and that's not evident just yet. We've had some fairly significant weakness. Yes, they have steadied up over the last couple of days, but we need to see them hold above those lows that we saw just recently to really indicate that there is a low of importance there. And of course, the other big story this week has been the strength of the soft commodities. Soybeans up over 1,100, wheat flirting with 1,000, and corn looks like it's going to break upwards to new high ground. So relative strength there, not just within the sector, but right across the board, we're seeing soft commodities outperforming on the upside. And given the fact that they are relatively smaller markets, the weight of money there could produce some really rather impressive uptrends, and definitely something to keep an eye on. Looking very much more at the longer term, the interjection of central banks into the credit markets has probably lengthened the cycle. And we can see that most clearly from those long-term yield charts, because yields have fallen very aggressively over the last 3 to 6 months. And they're testing those 2003 lows, particularly there in the US. And that is certainly a rather important event. What we're also seeing right now is that central banks are probably going to bail out the banking sectors. Our governments don't allow their banking sectors to go out of business anymore because that creates more trouble than bailing them out does. So we're seeing central banks bailing out the banking sector via the yield curve. And this means that they're dropping the short end of the curve incrementally, at least in the US. And that will eventually create rather a large arbitrage between the short end and the long end of the curve, which will allow banks to recapitalize themselves. So that is something that is rather important. It does have longer term inflationary concerns, or it sparks those and certainly stokes them. But right now, what that is helping to do is injecting large amounts of liquidity, which will eventually find their way probably into equity markets. And that does certainly help me to think that equity markets are probably going to perform rather well into 2008, and particularly as the credit crisis has a diminishing impact on investor sentiment. Certainly, there's a wall of worry in there right now. But what this also is an indication of, particularly when we look at that yield chart, we have had a period where interest rates were rising incrementally, and inflationary fears had grown to an extent that they had become a factor for the general population. And then over the last sort of 6 to 9 months, inflation has become less of a worry. Oil came back rather considerably, and with economic growth slowing, we had inflation becoming less of a problem. But now we're in a scenario where interest rates are starting to come down, and it is really rather unlikely that they're going to come right back down to the levels we saw in 2002, 2003. And the next time they start to rise, there's a strong likelihood that they will rise higher than the highs that we saw just recently. And that points towards an uptrend in the interest rate profile, which will eventually transfer into an uptrend for government bond yields. But it's going to be very gradual, and the aggressive buying of bonds over the last sort of 3 to 6 months is a signal that we are probably going to see this trend in the yield profile being really rather gradual, because yields have come off so sharply, and it's going to take them a while to start getting back upwards. Regarding equity markets in the sort of short to medium term, it wouldn't be a bullish factor at all to see bond prices coming off aggressively, because that would be an indication that we had rising interest rates being priced into markets, and that would be a headwind for equities. But I think that that is unlikely. It took 6 months for bond prices to get up to the recent highs, excuse me, and it could take that long for them to get back down towards their lows. But over the longer term, we can expect interest rates to go up gradually, and certainly not in a linear fashion, but we will have miniature cycles where inflation is not a problem, and stock markets are likely to do very well in those periods, very much like we've seen over the last 2 or 3 years. But then we will also see periods where inflation is becoming more of a problem. And that is probably going to be more of the case, probably not next year, but probably not long after that. And some of the reason for that is because of the massively bullish activity we're seeing right across the soft commodity sector. Asia has more than half of the world's population, and per capita incomes there are rising very, very significantly and really very quickly. And the first thing someone does when they have more money is that they increase the amount of money that they spend on foods and they improve their diets. They move away from subsistence to having a more balanced diet. Balanced diet means more carbohydrates and more meats. And that is certainly something that we are seeing with demand growing right across the globe. And over the last 6 months, of course, the dollar weakness has certainly helped demand for a number of those soft commodities. But we are seeing increases in a large section of the commodity area where we have soft commodities either making new highs in the case of grains or breaking up from long-term bases in the case of commodities such as cocoa and to a degree cotton, although that is not a food. And this is certainly something that is well worthy of mention. Oil, of course, is also very close to its all-time peaks and historically is very high. It does appear that regardless of any of the arguments that we have out there at the moment, that oil does look like it's going to be higher for longer, and that also has longer-term inflationary pressures. The industrial metals at the moment are the weaker of the whole sector, and they're going through a consolidation right now. Tin is probably the one that is most likely to come off, purely because it has been so strong in relative terms and does appear to be topping out, at least in the medium term, and will be looked at by people who are looking to short this sector. I think that there is also the likelihood that we have people going long of the softs and probably short of the industrial metals as a pairs trade. But longer term, looking at the enormous demand and growth that we're seeing in Asia, we have the industrial, sorry, the enterprising East and the wobbly West. In the West, both to an extent in Europe and certainly in the USA, we have problems with literacy, we have problems with education, we have problems with large bureaucracies and with welfare payments really starting to become concerns. We have pension liabilities going forward. We have considerably less GDP growth than many countries in Asia. We have shrinking populations to a large extent, although that is not the case in the USA, whereas we have massively abundant human resources right across Asia. So this not only is there a change in the ability to create wealth in the world, but it's likely to be very long term just because of demographics. If there's one inevitability we're going to have, it's that those massive populations of young people under the age of 20 are going to get older. And as they get older, they're going to want jobs and they're going to want houses of their own and start their own families. And that points towards massive investment, not only in investment that has already happened, but ongoing investment right across the Asian region and in the Middle East, and of course, further down the road, probably in Africa as well. But this is also pointing towards massive investment from state-run bodies because they will be chasing that GDP growth as drivers for those stock markets. So not only will we have countries investing in themselves, but sovereign wealth funds from around the world, many of which are situated in the Middle East and Asia, will be investing heavily in their own sectors. And I think that is probably increasingly the case. And given the growth potential for sovereign wealth funds and for where they are going to wish to put their money, there's a good chance that we're going to see outperformance and a certain amount of decoupling in the Asian region going forward. Decoupling is something that brokers have been talking about for years, and it's not happening overnight. But what we can definitely see, particularly over the last 6 months, is that Asia is performing considerably better than Western indices. Now, we have a number of those Asian indices, not making new highs. There really are only India, Malaysia, and Indonesia have made new highs recently. But the impact that the subprime issue has had on Asia generally is certainly considerably less than we've seen in some of those Western European or indeed South American indices. So that is definitely something to bear in mind. And of course, countries that can profit from the growth of Asia, be those Australia or Canada or indeed Brazil, are also well worthy of mention and should certainly be on the hit list for people who are interested in playing, particularly in the commodity sector. The currency markets are also certainly a long-term concern, particularly in the Western world, but increasingly globally, because of globalization. There's no country wants to have a strong currency for the long term, because they have to think of their exporters, and their exporters consolidate their earnings in their home currency. And if their home currency is strong, it means less earnings for their exporters. So what we see right now is the euro has had appreciated right up to $1.50, and that had led to some rather high cries going out across Asia. And we saw Airbus complaining that they had to reassess their business model because the euro had got so strong. And now we have the dollar strengthening. We're unlikely to see extremely long-term trends in the currency markets, particularly in those reserve currencies, because there is no country who wants to have a strong currency. But there is an exception here, and that is certainly in the Asian region, because so many of their currencies were remarkably undervalued for such a long time, as many countries deliberately held down the value of their currencies. Now, India is starting to let its currency appreciate, and China has led the way in gradually allowing the yuan to appreciate. That is taking pressure off of other currencies in the region, and we see the Singapore dollar of the developed countries there really allowing its currency to appreciate quite considerably, followed by the Korean won. But this is very much more a longer-term theme. As growth in Asia becomes very much the leader globally, and as economies grow and capital markets deepen, having such undervalued currencies will become more of a liability than a bonus for many economies, and we can anticipate that currencies are going to appreciate there against those reserve currencies of the West, and that is something that is a longer term theme. But of course, because also stock markets will also be appreciating, we benefit twice by investing there, because we have the added benefit not only from stock markets but also from those appreciating currencies relative to our own. And that is certainly something that needs to be borne in mind when one is investing there. Longer term, we can anticipate also that because you have masses of new consumers entering the global marketplace and billions of them coming from Asia, that with the per capita consumption of commodities rising and the supply of those commodities remaining relatively confined, that is going to have longer term inflationary pressures. Not only because we have food prices rising and energy prices rising and industrial commodity prices rising, but simply because on the demand side there is much greater demand for commodities. And on the supply side, over the last 10 to 15 years, we've had Western banks in particular flooding the market with liquidity. Every time there's been a deflationary scare, everyone saw the experience of Japan, and there was, I'm sure, a collective vow that we were not going to let that happen in our country from central bankers. So they've injected the market with liquidity every time they've had a fear of deflation. And that has been going on for quite a considerable time, with the Russian debt default and the tequila crisis and the, well, let's not forget the crash in 1987, but Y2K and 9/11, and just recently, even just a couple of days ago. And you simply can't keep creating money above GDP, the level of GDP growth, without it having some sort of inflationary impact longer term. There is a massive supply of bonds out there. There is certainly no shortage of them. And that is also a concern. One of the better charts, I think, to look at is the Australian bond chart and look at it very long term. We've got plenty of price history in the chart library. And you'll see there that that is a top waiting to break down. And it does have an inevitability about it, which does point towards higher interest rates further down the line. So that is something that is also very much in the mix. We're almost certainly going to have a commodity super cycle unfolding. It's been going well for the last 5 years, but it has considerably further to go. But in conjunction with that, we're going to have periodic inflationary scares, and they will get increasingly more scary the further on we go within this cycle, and interest rates are likely to go up in conjunction with that. When they fall, they're likely to fall less than they had in the previous cycle within the overall secular move. And that also points very much towards the precious metal sector performing. Precious metals are in relatively short supply, not only because they're rare in the first place, but also because mine supply is falling. But in a world where fiat currencies are losing their credibility, particularly as inflationary fears rise, then people look for a store of value. And commodities generally are a good store of value, of course, as is real estate. Now, real estate in a number of markets, particularly in the West, is quite overvalued right now, and I certainly wouldn't advise anyone to go out and invest in it. Because while in some areas it will certainly hold its value, it has been an outperforming sector for the last 10 to 15 years in particular, and that leadership has now passed on to different sectors. So while in certain cases real estate will probably hold its value in the Western world, it's unlikely to outperform other asset classes. When we talk to investors, and indeed when we talk to ourselves, we are constantly trying to be the judge at the International Beauty Contest. And it looks like the flower of real estate has faded somewhat over the last couple of years. That's probably not the case so much in Asia, where we have massive GDP growth. And in areas where property is in short supply, probably the most obvious there being Hong Kong and Singapore, but also around those big cities in Asia, we're probably going to see rather good bull markets in property going forward. But precious metals are very much to the fore right now. They're consolidating right now, and it's a volatile consolidation above the range which they'd been in for almost 18 months. And this was a fantastically consistent uptrend that we saw from those August lows. So while they are consolidating, they're likely to be whippy, as is very characteristic for the market. But longer term, this uptrend is very much intact. And when you look at gold or silver longer term, it does look like we are on path or on track for a very significant appreciation in these resources going forward. Oil also, having recently hit almost $100 and pulled back rather considerably, is consolidating, and that is also likely to be quite a volatile consolidation. Uncharacteristically, the move upwards from $50 to $100 in the last year, doubling in price, was remarkably consistent, which is really out of character with how oil had performed in the years previous to that. That points towards a bigger disparity between supply and demand. And while we are now starting to hear commentary that it was completely driven by speculation, that fundamentals don't support these high prices, We certainly weren't hearing those arguments when oil was appreciating in this consistent uptrend. The very fact that it's consolidating tells us that supply and demand has come very much more back into balance, as have bullish and bearish arguments. But there's no chart action there to tell us that this uptrend has finished, and it does just remain likely that we're going to see further consolidation in this sector. And the fact that we're seeing consolidation in the oil sector, consolidation in the equity markets, consolidation in the precious metals sectors, and that is something that also points towards nervousness in a number of markets. We've had a big flight of capital into the short end of the yield curve, and slowly but surely that is starting to come out, and I think we have seen the very best of the rally that in government bond prices, and they're gradually going to start coming back down as worries wane out of the market. But it's relative performance that is probably key to making money right now, and soft commodities are certainly where that is. Personally, I've been a bit slow to get into these, but I hope to have opportunity to increase my position in the soft commodity sector rather than just talking about it. But with that thought, I will leave you for the evening, but thank you very much for your time.